and welcome to the Doula Doula podcast with me, Leanne from Birthhood and Meg from Birth Evolution. We are both birth and postnatal doulas with over 12 years experience supporting people through pregnancy, birth and the postnatal period.
In this podcast, we'll be taking a deep dive into birth in a relaxed and informal space, bringing you knowledge, experience and tips in a way that supports you, whether you are pregnant, working in the birth world or just a birth nerd like us.
We'll be leaving no stone unturned with our unfiltered approach to conversation about birth and can't wait for you to join us.
All opinions are, of course, our own, and our experiences and discussions in no way constitute medical advice. Let's doula this.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Doula Doula podcast with me, Meg, and the gorgeous Leanne.
Hey.
Today, we are going to be talking about something that, as doulas, we take for granted that we know quite a lot about, and it comes as very natural to us to know that there are options when it comes to choosing where to give birth. But we come across people quite regularly who really don't know that there are options and what those options are. Do you find that as well with clients, Leanne?
Absolutely. I think the first thing the conversation we have is where are we thinking about choosing to birth? And they go, oh, well, I've booked in at this hospital. I'm kind of like, okay, well, you do know you've got a right to choose wherever the hell you want to birth. And they're going, no, I just got asked if it was this hospital or this hospital. And So that's where that starts, really, isn't it?
I remember with my first pregnancy, more than nine years ago, and I went to a booking in appointment. I can remember the room and everything. And I remember, so I was, 8 weeks pregnant for the very first time. And I remember her saying, so where are you going to have the baby? And I was like, what?
Yep.
Number one, I have no idea what the answer to that question is, because what do you mean?
Yeah.
I didn't have a clue. I guess I will have known that home birth existed as a concept, I suppose. But aside from that, I was really confused. And I think she said something like, oh, will it be at this hospital? And I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have a clue. So actually in that scenario, I'd almost put something down, or she'd put something down on my behalf, but without me actually having any information about it whatsoever. And I really remember that, and assume there's so many people out there who are exactly the same, that they're asked that question, they really don't know the answer.
That's it happens for every single client of mine, unless they have already kind of absolutely like shit hot on their antenatal education before they even get pregnant. And there's not many people like that, because it's something.
And why would you be? Like most people
wouldn't. But there are some people that do. So unless you are that person where you've already thought about it and you go into that booking appointment and say, I've considered these as my options, and I'll do my scans at this hospital, but my place of birth will be here.
Yeah.
You are literally not going to be told what your options are at that point. And even on the front of the booklets, it will say like place of birth.
Yeah.
Are they having those place options discussed at that point? No. So how are you going to know? And then they come to us for hypnobirthing or doula support, and we have that conversation, and you go through the whole rigmarole of what you get where, and then they're like, oh, I didn't realize, I might consider changing.
But sometimes if we're getting clients who are already 30 weeks plus, there actually is then, for some of them, required to be a whole mindset shift, because it's only then that they're realizing the concept of alternative locations. And actually, it's never too late to decide where you can literally go into labor and change your mind where you go to have your baby. However, as we know, that mental preparation and understanding what's involved in place of birth, you want a lot longer than that to process it. So people who are listening to this might already be thinking, there's places, how many places are there? What are the options? So should we go through them in turn?
Yeah, I think so.
So there are three. See, sometimes I present it as four, but we'll go with three locations where you can birth your baby. Number one, at home. Now, I think we will do plenty of other podcast episodes on just home birth. But in a nutshell, home birth kind of encompasses your bedroom, your living room, your bathroom, your garden, your mum's house. Home just means away from an NHS facility. So it literally could be your caravan, it could be a tent, whatever you want. it could be supported by midwives, independent or NHS, or not. So if we throw in free birth, which is not a location, but that would be a home birth.
Yeah.
So that would be home birth.
Yep.
Birth centres. What are birth centres, Leanne?
Well, you get two types of birth centres.
That's where I have four options in total.
That's
yeah,
where I have four options.
Yeah.
Exactly. So your birth centre is the approach I think most people come to when they discuss. It's like, oh, it's the home from home kind of feeling. And I agree to an extent, but they are NHS facilities. So they are midwife-led centres. So basically,
what does that mean? Because I know I use that phrase all the time. Of course we do, but I think we forget how experienced we are in that world. So what do you mean by midwife-led?
So there are no doctors, consultants, etc. in that facility, on that ward. So if you need medical intervention higher than what a midwife can do, remember they're really highly trained, you would need to go to another facility to continue that birth.
And and when we're talking about midwives, which I think it's quite important to reassure, is that within that scope of midwives, there are midwifery support workers, newly trained midwives, student midwives, all the way up to extremely senior midwives, birth center managers, and so on. So it's not, there isn't an absence of epic experience and qualifications and knowledge. Yeah.
Yeah, they wouldn't be able to run if they didn't have that. The thing I think with birth centres are that they are that go-between, I think, for a lot of people from home to kind of the labour ward, which is the other one we're going to discuss. So usually it's a little bit more for, I'm using like inverted commas, low-risk pregnancies where, we'll come back on that. It's kind of for your less medical births.
Sometimes.
all these caveats to it. So it's more of a midwife-led in the sense that you aren't going to be having as much medical intervention with that birth in that space, ideally. When they are attached to the, like, a hospital, you've got a much higher risk of then being transferred because it's easy to go down a corridor to the next ward if you need it, whereas the freestanding ones, like we've got a great one in Leicestershire called St Mary's, which is independent. You go there and you birth and you can stay there for as long as you want postnatally, and it's
not attached to a hospital.
No, not attached to a hospital. So it's still NHS ran, and I know quite a few of the midwives that work there and they're brilliant. But if you do need medical intervention, you would need a 15-minute ambulance ride to the nearest hospital. So,
whereas if you're in a alongside attached one, it's upper lift, upper floor, through a corridor.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So the final one then, so you've got home birth or your home, you've got a midwife-led birth centre, of which there are two types, and then you've got what most people think of as a labour ward, delivery suite. I think all around the country, it's referred to in so many different names. Consultant-led unit, birth suite. That's probably all the different phrases that a lot of people tend to associate it with it. But consultant-led in that there's midwives there. So it's still midwife supported, if you like. Yeah. But ultimately, there's greater seniority. Oh my God, I must make seniority when it comes to clinical and medical care. So there's obstetricians, consultants, registrars, anaesthetists, surgical teams. So you have access to a greater level of medical support, both personnel wise and kit in that space. So you mentioned about risk level. In theory, according to NHS guidelines and policy, low risk people would tend to be steered towards a birth center or home birth, and higher risk people would air quotes amundo, higher risk people are likely to be steered towards a labor ward because they're deemed to potentially require more medical input. And that's kind of the locations in a nutshell.
A lot of the time, high risk, low risk, or you are put on a pathway which is very similar, but they like to have a little moderate in the middle. So it's that cautionary, you're on the moderate pathway. So we'll see where we are at this point as to where you advise. Now, I think what I want to also add in at this point is that just because you're on a pathway doesn't mean to say that your options of where you birth are limited, because if you will be told that, 100% will you be told that if you're high risk, the only place you can birth is the hospital. I'm in the labour ward. I'm sure you probably had that experience, but
yeah, that phraseology is used frequently. We won't allow you to. You can't use a birth centre. We won't allow you to birth at home. You are only allowed to blah. So just to get really technical, Article 8 of the European Convention on Human Rights and the Human Rights Act state that you have the right to a private and family life. And what that means in a birthy context is you get to choose your place of birth. End of story. Nobody can force you to birth in a particular location, and that includes, home is included in that, and regardless of your risk level, your perceived risk level, that human right still absolutely remains, and that's the legal setting of all of this, and that's really important to remember, because the not allowed language is used so much.
Yeah, it's really important. On that note, let's add in that if you want to find a bit more, go on the birthrights.org website and learn a bit more about your birthrights at this point.
They have a fact sheet specifically. Yeah. Bring it up right now. I'm actually on the website. Choice of place of birth is one of their fact sheets, and there's tons of information in there. So yeah, really good chat.
I think it's really important you do. One of my last births was a home birth after cesarean. Absolutely, like third baby was being told how much she was putting her baby at risk by choosing a home birth. Amazing home birth midwife in attendance, and the birth was just wonderful. And again, her knowledge that was an option was massive for her to get the kind of experience that she felt she deserved, that she knows she wouldn't have gotten.
And on paper, VBAC, high risk. High BMI, other previous medical conditions, gestation, IVF, blah, all. We could go on. Okay, so practically speaking, what's the difference then between, so for example, home and birth centres?
Yep.
Let's just lump birth centres into one.
Yep.
What can I have at a birth centre I can't have at home?
I think in my head, I always flip that, like in the fact that like there's not really a difference at all from being at home.
You can have your dog at home.
Apart from the benefits of the fact that you are more comfortable at home, you've got your pets, you can have your siblings or like the other children there. You can have
support, maternity support wise. I think a lot of people would query, do I get all of that at home? And the answer is obviously not the consultant led labour ward stuff, but compared to a birth centre, everything you have in a birth centre,
everything
you can have at home.
100%. And because you're at home, though, the irony is that you're less likely to need to use it.
So, and also, you get more midwife attention, don't you? Because you have one-to-one midwife care, and that midwife isn't going to be disappearing off anywhere. And then, at the point of birth, assuming everything has gone at a rate that they can get there, you have two midwives, one to care for you and one to care for baby, which, of course, is the same for birth centres as well, but it's just they're your special people.
Yep, and I think that's... I think the key thing that most people, when they're thinking about home versus a birth centre, is that if they need anything and they're at the birth centre, then it's easier and it's closer. That's the only difference. But as I've just said, being somewhere near to...
So if it's an alongside birth centre, you mean? Yeah.
If you are there, then you're more likely to need something because... Yeah. Well, one of the reasons why where you birth matters is a physiological one. It's a hormonal one, which I know we're going to come to. And I think that's really important because at home, your hormones are going to be so much better to accommodate birth than anywhere else. So if you know you're going to get the same care there at home as you would, I think the biggest thing as well, I would say a lot of people talk about is the mess of home birth and a lot of organisation and things, and obviously both
you I have the capability alongside my children to make my home far messier than I ever could giving birth in it.
And you know what, obviously because we both attend births and home birth, I've never, like, I obviously stay a couple of hours after the birth and yeah. I leave, you wouldn't know that birth had happened there because everything is packed away, tidied away, you wouldn't even know. Yeah. So that's something I think we should definitely clear up, that myth of it's a messy situation.
Yeah. Oh, don't get me wrong, there can be. So I have been at a birth quite recently where because of how things were going, we didn't end up getting the opportunity or the chance to put loads of they would call them Conti pads or puppy pads, basically the little waterproof pads that you might put under somebody. We didn't get a chance to put those under her and she gave birth on her bed. So I yep. will accept that was quite messy on her, what turned out to be her favourite sheets. But she had a waterproof mattress cover because she's got other kids who pee in her bed, as all of our other kids do when they're that age. And so actually, I'm pretty sure that all of that will have gone in the wash and it's probably back on the bed.
Yeah.
Absolutely fine. So at first glance, it looked messy, but it's not something that isn't washable. We're talking bodily fluids here and it's... Yeah, absolutely fine.
And you're on your period and you leak, like.
Yeah. My dog makes more mess.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what do you get in a consultant-led delivery suite labour ward scenario that you can't have in a birth centre or at home?
Predominantly, your narcotics.
this has got narcotics. Love it.
Straight in there. So your opioids, pethidine, dimorphine.
Now, saying that, I've certainly up here, you could definitely have pethidine in birth centres.
Oh, yes, also, yes, same here.
And I, at home, I think very much trust specific. I will remain corrected on that one, but I think I have an experience of knowing that when people have, by prescription, have been able to have access to pethidine at home.
Same here.
But anyway, yeah, I digress. So, yeah, so...
I also have...
Pharmaceutical drugs.
Yeah, pharmaceutical drugs. And then, obviously, your epidural, spinal anaesthetic, they're also only available in a labour ward setting because you need an anaesthetist to administer them and they are only found on labour wards.
Procedures or interventions would you only be able to have on a labour ward?
Forceps birth. Sorry, Vontuse birth. Things like, obviously, cesarean birth. So things like fetal electrode, scalp electrode monitoring.
Yeah, so additional monitoring. So basically stuff that may ultimately is higher risk to the baby or the birthing person. It's weird, isn't it, that the high-risk people are urged to go to a labour ward and that everything that's offered there actually potentially then has higher risks to it, which is why it can only be done in a labour ward where there's medical care. And I think that's a cyclical conversation that would be for a different podcast episode as well.
I can't even get my words out. That's how much that makes me cross.
That labour wards provide the greatest valuable care that, thankfully, in our country, we have that every day save lives of birthing people, babies, and does a fantastic job. But I think you are incredibly naive if you can't recognise that there are also some elements of treatment and procedural activities that cause 100%. Damage that then requires the need to be in the labour ward. It's like this self-fulfilling prophecy in a way.
Yeah, like induction of labour, that can only, well, I say can only parts of that, most of that can only happen there. You can, I have had clients who started an induction process on the labour ward, for example, having a pessary, but then labour progressed and they continue to go down to the birth centre upon agreement from the professional midwifery advocate.
Yeah.
That's something, the induction of labour. But obviously this is where, again, something like induction of labour, as we've just said, is often a catalyst for further intervention. So
that I think it's worth, I think the one thing that people maybe don't quite understand that they can only have in certain places is CTG monitoring. So when it comes to monitoring your baby, the normal heart rate monitoring using a Doppler obviously can be done anywhere. It's with a little sonic aid kit. To have CTG monitoring, which is that the belt monitor that we tend to think about, that can only be accessed in a labor ward. So if there's any risk factor that requires that, and ask lots of questions as to whether requires is really the actual word there, you would need to be on a labor ward in order to do that. But I think what's really, really important is that we just pay a little bit of attention, because going things on to why it matters is that none of this conversation is to say home birth brilliant, birth center okay, labor ward not so good in any way, shape or form, because home birth is absolutely not the right location for everybody, and labor ward is absolutely not the right location for everybody, and that doesn't necessarily always come down to your risk levels. That where you feel safe and okay and yep, the least threatened is the best place for you to give birth.
100%. I've got a client at the moment who works in a particular trust, and she is debating on whether to go to a freestanding midwife led centre or birth in the trust where she works. And she is umming and ahhing, basically, because she said her place of work is like a home for her. So she said, although I understand the clinical setting that it is, she was like, to me, that's a home. So I don't feel the way that some people might feel in that scenario.
That makes total sense.
Yeah. But she equally lives closer to somewhere else. So the freestanding. Yeah. So I think.
And
she,
I've supported people who have been low risk, air quotes again, who have chosen to be on a labour ward for their first baby. And, you know, they know that in theory, there's no reason why they couldn't birth at home or in a birth centre. But for them, it just felt like the safest place to be in a labour ward for their own personal unique reasons. And it's nobody else's business to kind of contradict that. It's not our business as a doula, is it, to ever say to somebody, well, why don't you just birth here instead? Because it'd be way better. It's none of my business where you want to give birth.
Would you say there is a percentage shift for first time to subsequent parents in terms of where they choose to birth?
I think there's a, even if they end up birthing, even first time parents birthing in more midwife led settings, I think when they come into pregnancy, there's definitely an expectation of better have a birth first in a more medicalized setting to see how I am. That almost that idea of I'll rehearse the first one. Yeah. And I think there's a generational thing where our parents are very much of that mindset. I know my mum, when I first suggested I was thinking about having a home birth with my first baby, her exact words immediately were, are you allowed to do that with your first? Yeah. I think there's that going into pregnancy, I don't think people realise that a birth centre or a home birth alternative is perfectly doable for a first birth. But yeah, I definitely think, particularly if there's been a more medicalized first birth, people then tend to really want to actively lean towards more midwife-led care, for sure.
I have to wholeheartedly agree with that.
For so many reasons. And not always because they've had a negative experience at all, just through greater knowledge and greater understanding of themselves and greater confidence, I think.
Yeah, because you have to have confidence in yourself, but also where you birth, and unfortunately you can look at statistics, can't you, for your local birthplaces, and those statistics might not give you a comfort in choosing to birth there. No. So you do look elsewhere and think, hold on, I would feel safer in this setting, but look at that rating, and there's a 40% chance of me having an unplanned cesarean in that trust, whereas actually the home birth transfer rate is 0.8%. So hold on, I'm a low risk pregnancy. There's nothing to suggest I'm going to need that, but I'm at greater risk being in that setting than I am being at home for that particular thing. And so for them, it's important that they know those statistics, because
definitely
you're making informed choices then, aren't you?
You've hit the nail on the head, and we're kind of now going into quite a more practical thing of what, how do we even make this decision? Why is it important? And how, effectively, what tips do we have for being in this position of, I don't know where I want to give birth and how to actually make that decision? I think even though statistics are not the be all and end all, ultimately your gut makes this decision. But like you said, definitely access. They call them like birth dashboards and stuff, don't they? And all these kind of this information that literally tells you for your trust, how many water births were there this month and how many inductions were this month and how many spontaneous births and all this kind of stuff. But even then, be prepared to read between the lines, because certain information will be given, certain information will be combined in order to subtly ignore certain procedures that they might not be wanting you to know about, or certainly know the scale of the, how that, how many are happening. But it was another birth worker who put a post about this, and it's gone out of my head who it was again, who made a really clear statement that you've also got your kind of Ofsted equivalent of, yeah, in terms of hospitals. So your CQC reports that are basically like Ofsted, aren't they? And they basically investigate the quality of various elements of hospital care. And that even looking at that, in the same way, you shouldn't look at an Ofsted report and base your decision for your children going to school solely on that, because it's way more deep than that, is CQC reports on hospitals are not necessarily giving you the level of statistics and information you want. So, for example, it'll tell you that everybody's wearing the right uniform X percentage of the time, or it'll tell you staffing levels in certain parts where, which may be of interest, but it isn't going to tell you necessarily the quality of care, the quality of person-centered care, going down to the nitty-gritty of postnatal support, of the skill of the infant feeding team, or indeed how many inductions are done, how many unplanned cesareans are done by month and so on. So data's great, but don't be so naive as to think that all those numbers are without their, what's the word? Inaccuracy, shall we say.
Yeah, and you're bang on, because obviously recently for me and my trust, there's been two reports that's come out.
Oh yeah, you just had some, haven't you?
Yeah, so the CQC reports come out for our two main birthing hospitals, and the which includes the two attached birth centres and then the freestanding birth centre that we've got. And unfortunately, all three of those have been downgraded. Birth centre from good to requires improvement, and the two birthing maternity hospitals down to inadequate, which is, like I say, on its own is...
That's scary, isn't it, for people in your locality?
And as somebody who works in all three settings and at home, I see both good and bad practice. And I think it's important that when you are choosing, that you are speaking to people who can comment on the care. The other thing that I want to kind of add as well is that you, in terms of choosing your place of birth, there is, in most trusts, like a maternity voices partnership. So where you basically can... there's a group of people, both internal and external, parents, doulas, etc., and midwives, who try and improve the care, I don't say care, but that's not the right word, but of the standard of care, sorry, in that maternity service. So again, as long, well as that CQC, the survey report came out as well, and it does echo that report from the CQC. So it is, we know that in the, I think, again, I know we're digressing a little bit, but I think it's important to know that nobody really goes into this into midwifery and aim to not provide a service of care that's not in the best interest of, but because of, as we said, staffing shortages and things like that, then when you're choosing your birthplace, you need to be mindful that these things can have an impact. So if you understand them, it's not that you're then going to go, well, that was inadequate on there, so I'm not going to go there.
Yeah, it's definitely.
Get a feel of everything and get yourself with a toolkit to help yourself.
Yeah.
And I think, obviously, I know I'm digressing a lot and I'm sorry. I think it's just something that when you're looking at place of birth, it's really important to consider that you, it's not just a...
Definitely.
Yeah, one size fits all, because that says it's inadequate. It obviously is. It's definitely not like that.
I think you're right about having that toolkit as well as a really top tip in choose your place of birth, but don't, whichever place of birth you're choosing, have that toolkit that ultimately the statistics don't have to be replicated in your birth. Okay. So let's say if you look at comparing alongside or attached birth centers with freestanding birth centers, you statistically, if you start off in a freestanding birth center, you are less likely to end up having an episiotomy, a managed third stage, postpartum hemorrhage, cesarean, and so on, than if you started off in an attached one. Now, that doesn't mean, oh, my days, must not go to an attached one because I'm more likely to have that. Because actually, if you go in there really informed, really prepared to advocate, understanding why those statistics are the way they are, then you can, you're the one in control. You are the one that gets to choose a lot of that stuff. Yeah. So it's, you've got to go in with yourself as being a big contributor to the outcome that you have in a place of birth. And that is not saying that if you are informed, can advocate, chilled and can breathe right, that things don't happen. But you definitely need to know what to question when you go into any space, really.
Yeah, because not you, this is, and this is the thing is there's only so much of birth that you can control.
Yeah.
Because there is a baby in there ultimately that will have an impact on that birth. I think the first choice to be in control of, though, is always going to be where you choose to have your care. So that's why this podcast is important, to know that you can have control over as much as you can, and the first point is that point. So educate yourself so that you can make that choice. And actually, I don't like saying educate yourself, because that really puts a lot of emphasis on the birth in person, when actually they should be told what their options are.
If only.
From the get-go.
Especially things like, you could birth in a labour ward and have a beautiful environment, have access to water, have never see a doctor at all, and have that picture perfect birth that you've wanted.
I have attended labour ward births where you wouldn't have known you was in a labour ward by the environment that was set up. And it was one-to-one midwifery care, and that was it. We didn't see anybody else during that. It was a straight forward. We didn't need to. It was a transfer from home, but it wasn't an emergency, and they didn't need it. It was just have extra monitoring, basically, for a fetal problem. So, it is that you can make things, because you understand what's more likely to happen in each birth space, you can then try and, I suppose, manipulate the outcome a little bit, because in the way that you can create an environment that makes you feel safer. So, yes, you're there and you don't want to be there, but you can actually feel safer, so therefore you can...
Absolutely.
More likely to take harm or whatever. It's definitely
already mentioned, because I know we had a couple of things written down about why it matters and things. I think we've kind of covered all of them a little bit, really, haven't we, about hormones and physiology and looking at statistics and outcomes, needing to feel safe and really going with your gut of where you want to give birth, and then demanding that the people supporting you allow you to have, or enable you, support you to have the birth that you want in whatever location it is that you get to choose.
Yeah, and I want to highlight that, because you've literally just said where you get to choose, and I want to highlight that you get to choose, not your family, not your partner, and a lot of times I hear, oh, I wanted a home birth, but my partner didn't think it was a good idea. I wanted a home birth, my family said it would be dangerous. Now, that is all well and good if both of those people who are supporting you are fully informed and are kind of, you're doing, making a decision together, and you're sharing those thoughts and reasons. But to have anybody, whether that's a hospital member of staff, your midwife, whatever, or a partner, tell you you can't buy her somewhere, that's a red flag.
Well, it's the same, isn't it? I wanted to go to, so our local freestanding is Blackburn Birth Centre. I wanted to go to Blackburn Birth Centre, but my friend said, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, so I'm going to go to another place instead. Like, what do you say? What do you say about this? And where do you want to, you know, this isn't a rehearsal, whether it's your first, second, third, fourth baby, it's none of it is a rehearsal.
None of it.
No.
I mean, I didn't have the option for a home, I suppose I did with my first or my second, because the home birth team wasn't established in my area at the time. I still could have had one, I guess, but it wasn't an established team at that point. I never had that conversation, and it wasn't ever something. But the key thing for me is I knew I understood my physiology and the benefits of at least labouring at home. So I laboured at home for as long as possible with both of mine, because that was the preference that I had. I felt safest, which meant that when I did transfer into the birth centre, both babies were born very quickly upon arrival, mm-hmm. because established labour was already happened. And
that's such a good point to kind of finish on, really, is we have kind of been guilty of this today, is we've gone into that there are these three places to birth that you could choose from, but actually, particularly if you are going into spontaneous labor at home, it's going to be two different locations, that you're actually going to be laboring in one place, so your mm-hmm. home, for example, and birthing in another. And to consider that when you're thinking about place of birth, but also, again, another podcast here about birth planning, consider if you choose home or birth center, think about what the location is going to be if there is a transfer required, and think about how you're going to manage that new location as well. So look at, if you're going to a freestanding birth center, where are the ambulances going to end up taking you to, and then so on. So, you know, for example, over here, Blackburn Birth Centre, an ambulance from Blackburn Birth Centre will take you to Burnley. It won't take you to Preston, which isn't actually that much further away. Yeah. So it's, whereas you might think that the labour ward is better in Preston, for example, I'm just using these randomly, obviously, they're both brilliant places to birth. You really need to consider the destinations of transfers and stuff as well. I thought this was going to be a really simple, it's just places of birth. It's like 1, 2, 3, and we could go on for hours.
Hours. I think it's good because it's really going to hopefully open people's eyes that there's a lot of things to consider. It's not just where you birth your baby. There's loads of things to consider. So I think that's good. But equally, I think we could definitely do a podcast on each of these. So
what we should say is, if anybody's listening to this and we've thrown up any questions or talking points and you feel like you want to ask anything, then of course always feel free to get in contact with either of us separately. And we'll always be happy to give any extra information. Obviously, in terms of our professional experiences, we've only got the localities where we are working and where we've had our own babies. But generally around the UK, the processes and what, you know, the availability of facilities are very, very comparable. But for now, on place of birth, I think we need to wrap that up, or we'll be here tomorrow.
I agree.
Thank you very much for listening, everybody. And we'll speak to you soon.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Doula Doula podcast with me, Leanne from Birthhood.
And me, Meg from Birth Evolution. It's been great to have you here with us as we chat about all things pregnancy, birth and postnatal.
We'd love to know what you think, so please do leave us a review. Follow both Meg and I on socials and share with your friends too. They'll be really glad you did.
Don't miss future episodes, as there's so much more to come. Hit follow so you never get Doula Doula FOMO.